Hey, everybody. November is just around the corner. We've got another big election coming up.
Is it really just around the corner? What, 5 months out?
You joke about that. I will remind you when the day is upon us and you're like, I can't believe it's already here and I'm not ready for this. And
you're right.
You know it's going to get here fast.
So, yeah, 4.5 months out until November.
Wait for all the ads.
The ads will be fascinating. In fact, one of our guests on this episode is doing something different. This person is using all AI in a number of ads, and not AI to go after. Yeah, not AI to go after his opponents, but AI to tell stories, and so that's just kind of interesting. So, in this episode, we're focusing on the three major individuals running for lieutenant governor.
The most powerful position in this state.
Absolutely, and we've talked about that a number of times. And why is it the most powerful? Because the lieutenant governor, who leads the Texas Senate, is the one who can decide whether bills, legislation, live or die.
They're the gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper, indeed. So, the incumbent is Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. He's been there for 3 terms, 12 years. He's running for a fourth 4-year term. You're going to hear from him in just a moment about what he wants to do in 4 more years. The Democrat is Vicki Goodwin. She's a state rep who represents part of Austin. And then the independent has been running for this race a number of times. It's Mike Collier. He is a former bookkeeper. He ran as a Democrat. He always told me that he voted Republican. Well, now he's running as an independent.
And that's an interesting point, too, because you've got that Collier-Goodwin phenomenon happening. And does that siphon votes? Because it's already a monumental task taking on an incumbent with the name recognition like Lieutenant Governor Patrick, and who also has the war chest that he has. And so that's curious to see how that other dynamic is going to play out between those second and third candidates.
Let's start the episode here with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, what he wants to do in the next 4 years. Here's what he said. Governor Patrick, welcome back to the program here. You are running for a fourth term. What more do you want to do in the next 4 years you haven't already done?
Well, we've done a lot. You know, when I first was elected, school choice was a priority, reducing property taxes, school property taxes, because that's what the state controls, a priority, pro-life issues, pro-Second Amendment issues, and also mental health care issues, which Jason, I've invested a lot in, over $3 billion. We just cut the ribbon on the brand new state-of-the-art mental health care facility in Dallas that I put $400 million in the budget. Children's Hospital put $260, so it's bought and paid for. They take their first patient on June 30th, state-of-the-art in the country. We're building 6 mental health care hospitals across the state, or we're adding to current hospitals. So there's a lot that needs to continue to be done. But on property taxes, and you and I have been working on this a long time, we increased the homestead exemption to $200,000 for seniors, as you recall, last year, which has wiped out school property taxes for the average senior homeowner. Wiped them out. That's $200,000. Under 65 is $140,000. I want to take them to $200,000. Right now, we've cut school taxes about 40% for the average homeowner. I want to continue to increase that. But one of the things I want to do this session, Jason, is currently to get the home values frozen, you have to be 65 years of age.
Yeah.
I want to reduce that to 55. After all, if you go into Denny's, you only have to be 55 to get the Grand Slam breakfast as a senior. So why do we arbitrarily say your home values are frozen at 65? So in the state, I'm going to reduce them down. I call it the double nickel, 55, to get down to 55. That will save the average homeowner thousands of dollars, $12,000 to $15,000 or more, depending on the price of the home, over the 10 years between 55 and 65. And it will freeze their values at 55 instead of 65. So that's a big issue I want to follow up on. I'm still focused on the THC issue. We need to get that out. These smoke shops closed. We need to get these products that are, we're selling heroin in these gas stations, not the big chain, convenience stores. I'm talking about these little mom and pops in all these neighborhoods. So that's a focus. And so a lot more to do. And I love what I do. And I've got a great Senate. And so that's why we're running.
Zooming out away from property taxes, though, I mean, obviously, you and I have been talking property taxes for a long time, though. What are two other huge issues facing the state right now? I mean, we're talking everything from water to affordability to insurance costs here in Texas. What are the other big issues facing the state you'd like to address?
So number one is water. That's just the reality. You know, we were 10 million people. I'm sorry, 18 million people in 2000. We're now 30 million people. We're projected to add another 15 million people in the next 20 years. So water is a real issue. We have plenty of it, but we need to get it to where people live. And so that's an expensive proposition. We put about $6 billion into investing in water, but we're going to have to continue to do more every session. The grid, we're always going to have to keep up with the grid because, again, of growth. I mean, we are the fastest growing state in the country, and I call us a country in essence because we are, you know, the eighth largest economy in the world, soon to be the seventh. We just have to keep up with all this infrastructure to keep up with the growth. And there's a real issue about data centers, for example.
Right.
Data centers can drain the grid and drive up utility costs. So we have to be sure that the data centers are producing their own power. I said a couple of years ago, you can't make this the wild, wild west. We want to be strong and a leader, but I think everyone understands that the data centers all over the country are growing faster than maybe the states can keep up with or the public. So those are big issues indeed. We have so much in a state, Jason, to be that we're blessed about. You know, we're number one in many agricultural items, of course, oil and gas, our medical facilities. But again, keeping up, keeping pace is important. I'll give you an example this past session, a bill I'm really proud of. I passed the dementia bill. We are putting $3 billion, $300 million a year for 10 years into Alzheimer's research. You know, we already do, I call it DPRIT, dementia prevention and research. We already do it for cancer prevention and research. We've done that for 10 years. We have the capability, Jason, in Texas to do more than anyone else about these big issues. And today in Texas, we have about a half a million people diagnosed with Alzheimer's. That impacts their entire families because once a person has full Alzheimer's, they need 24/7 care, and families have to give up jobs, to do that or get a second job to pay for the help. So this impacts millions of Texans, and that's the ones we know about, not the ones who are beginning those stages. And with our senior population growing, that's a big issue. I went to Washington 2 weeks ago. We got the award for the Humanitarian Alzheimer's Award of the Year because, put this into perspective, Jason. This is how big we are. The entire Alzheimer's Association last year in America spent $112 million. We're going to be spending $300 million a year. And the reason we do it for 10 years, by the way, we want to get the best researchers for Alzheimer's like we have for cancer. And the only way you get them here is to assure them that the grant money for research continues. If you're a doctor and a researcher, you're not going to come here if the next legislature can take the money away. And this was a constitutional amendment that the people voted almost 70% said, yes, we want to do this. So a lot of things, Jason, for a state like us, and we've got to take care of our health, our water, our grid, besides all the other things we have to do.
Let me ask you about a new way of campaigning that
Yes.
we've seen from you that we haven't seen from other Texas political candidates. You're now using AI, artificial intelligence, in some of your ads. These are obvious AI because, you know, there's the Alamo, there's a number of other older scenes that you've used in here. Why do you think that's more effective?
So it's a combination. If you look at the new ads, and I hope you'll have time to play the 30-second one, maybe of the Alamo, it's a combination of AI, because obviously I couldn't pay for a cast of thousands and build the Alamo. Although we are rebuilding the Alamo, as you know, in San Antonio to open next year, a grand opening. But it's a combination of live actors that were, in the video. Myself, I'm not AI. It's really me doing it. And we have a combination of music, sound effects. And the reason I did this, Jason, is we are at a precarious time in our state and our nation. There's no question. There's a fight on the left that undermines those of us on the right of how we see, our country, our values, our principles, capitalism, all of those issues, secure borders. And there's another, and pro-God, pro-religious liberty viewpoint. And there's another viewpoint. I'm not even saying it's Democrats and Republicans. It's darkness and light for me. I mean, anyone who insists that boys play girls sports is still in the dark, as far as I'm concerned. And there are many issues like that. So what I wanted to do is something different, and that's go back in time. So I'm at Independence Hall. I'm with Paul Revere. I'm at the Alamo. I'll be doing many more of these to go back in time to remind people of who we are as a country and as a state and what principles and values that we believe in, and bring it forward to how it applies to today. So it was a lot of fun. And then go to danpatrick.org if you can't play all three, but I hope you can play at least one of them. It's kind of
And
fun.
do you plan to change how you also campaign this cycle, or is that just a I don't say a one-off, but is that just, are the ads going to influence how you campaign this cycle, or is this
I'll be
just
putting millions and millions of dollars into those ads.
okay? So there'll be more.
There'll be more. And Jason, I've always, the typical political ad that people get You know, they see it over and over.
Yeah.
You know, it's a photograph of some elected officials talking to police, talking to kids in a library, talking to, you know, and it's some voiceover. Well, you know, such and such does such and such. I've never done those ads. I've always looked in the camera, talked to people as I did this primary. I used to use my truck, as you remember, my 52 Chevy. So I believe that elected officials, we should talk to the voters in these ads to tell them what we're going to do. And so this is just the next version of that. But I serve as chair, as you know, of the Religious Liberty Commission for President Trump. In fact, we're presenting our report to him next Thursday in the White House, in the Oval Office. It's going to be groundbreaking, by the way, on religious liberty. We've been working on it for a full year. But it really brought home to me that too many people in this country do not know what our values and principles really are, what the founders really intended. And the state, what did they fight for at the Alamo? It was liberty and independence and freedom. We're still fighting for that today. So that's why I wanted to do these ads, and it's a lot of fun.
Let me ask one more question on these AI-generated political ads. Yours are obviously AI. People can look and see that. But are you concerned at all about this being a slippery slope for other candidates, for other campaigns?
Well, you shouldn't be AI for yourself. A candidate should be the real candidate. I mean, I'm in the ad, no different. It's just the backdrop is different. Look, you and I, you know, as your television career, people know what a green screen is. For the last 30 years, weathermen have been standing in front of a green screen. I don't want to burst the bubble for your weathermen and everyone watching, but they're standing in front of a green
Yeah.
screen that has a map on it. So AI is just the next revolution, or evolution rather, of the green screen, where it really wraps around you. It's a green screen that wraps around you that allows you to do that. But no candidate should ever do an ad where they have an AI person for them. That's why I'm in the ad. But to fill in the background, I mean, that's how movies are made today and different things. There's no way I could. I mean, if you look at my independence ad, I mean, I'm looking over my shoulder to the, you know, to the
Yeah.
founder working on the Declaration of Independence in Independence Hall. Well, how can I recreate that? But it's me doing the ad. So the background, I don't think matters.
How about using their opponent though in the political ad as an AI character?
I don't believe you should do that. I don't believe you should do that. You should not use AI to project on someone they're not. And we've had some battles in the legislature about that back and forth, and there's some nuances in there. But in general, look, I don't attack my opponents anyway. I've been in office now 20 years. I don't run personal attacks. I'll point out their record, but I don't run those kind of ads. I just never have. You know, let the people hear from me, decide if I'm the best person to do the things that they want me to do for themselves and their family and their business, and let it rest on that. You know, you go down the road, Jason, and start picking on people for different things in their personal lives. That's an endless road, quite frankly. And he who cast the first stone, who am I, type of deal. So I think we need to get back to policy, not people. It's policy. Right now, that's the difference in Texas between the Republicans and the Democrats. It just is. It's policy. James Talarico has a policy. Ken Paxton has a policy. And they are far different from each other. Let's focus on policy.
Governor, we all watched the Republican Party of Texas's convention in Houston the other day. You've called on Republicans to unite. You say that's essential to victory. Yet it still seems, on the outside looking in, that there's still a lot of hurt feelings here. We saw the tweet that John Cornyn sent back saying you should be worried about your own reelection. What was your reaction to that? And how divided are Texas Republicans right now?
Well, I found that kind of laughable from John, since the week before Senator Cornyn, a 30-year friend of mine, a very good person. But you know, the week before he passed out, it's going to be a massacre at the top of the ticket. So you can't have it both ways, Senator Cornyn. You're calling for a massacre. You're saying Donald Trump is going to be a disaster in the last 2 years, and then Republicans are worried about losing. Well, yes, because Republicans like John and others may decide not to support the candidates who won. And again, you know, I think we built the party on John's shoulders. He got elected in 1985 the first time, and he lost a tough election. But it used to be, Jason, not that long ago, when you lost an election, you supported the winner because we are in the same party. So I understand the angst there is. I understand the disappointment for Senator Cornyn. I understand the hurt, you know, when voters have turned to someone else. But the voters have sent him there for 24 years into the US Senate, a privileged life. The voters decided to make a change. So when he says I'm not supporting the ticket, what that really says to me, it has nothing to do with Ken Paxton. He's not supporting the voter's choice. And so we have to, and look, we'll come together. John will come together. He says he'll support the ticket, but we can't, we won't lose to the Democrats in Texas. We're a red state unless Republicans stay home. And so if you go down the list, you know, you had Don Huffines as a new controller. You've got Beau French as a new railroad commissioner candidate. You've got Mays Middleton as a new AG candidate. I said this back in February, and I know this is a long answer, Jason, but I know you're playing the whole interview online. So I'll give you this answer. I said back in February, there are 13 people well-known running for four key positions. I mean, Abbott and I had opponents, but they weren't serious opponents. But you had four in the Senate, U.S. Senate race. You had three or four in the controller's race. You had three in the AG's race and three in the railroad race, whatever the 13. Only four were going to win, Jason. Nine were going to lose. We cannot be a party where the nine losers say, I'm not happy with what the voters decided, so I'm not participating. That's not the way it works. The Democrats sure don't do that. So that's, look, there are some candidates who won I didn't support, but I'm supporting them now because our policy as Republicans is better than the Democrats' policy across the board in Texas. And, you know, we're the greatest place in the world. Texas is the greatest place in the world. All these people coming to Texas for the soccer, they're all saying, what are people complaining about America? I mean, they've discovered barbecue at Buc-ee's.
Right.
I mean, you've seen the stories. I mean,
yeah.
The people are coming from all over the world to America and say, what are Americans complaining about? We're surely not perfect, but we still are the land of liberty, and we're the light that people come to. And that's why 1,600 people a day are still moving to Texas. So I just want Republicans, you know, get over it, you know, take 30, 60 days. But when we get back into the real campaign season, starting after school starts in late August, all the Republicans need to unite behind our candidates. And I get it's tough losing an election, but you got to come back on board. Otherwise, you're helping the other side. And we don't want the policies of James Tallarico. We don't want someone who says God's not binary. We have six genders, and who celebrates when they ask James Tallarico, you know, what he thinks about most. He said spending time with transgender children. That's not public policy dealing with water and the grid and taxes. It's really a leftist idea.
Are you concerned, though, that Republican voters might not get over it by November, might stay home?
No, I'm not concerned that they will. We'll win in November. Greg Abbott, myself will win. I believe Ken Paxton wins. I believe we will continue to be a red state. But you can't sit here as a candidate, as I am, and take it for granted and say, oh, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
No, James Tallarico is going to have $150 million, much more than Beto had. And we saw in the Beto race where there were some Republicans that crossed over and voted for Beto. So the Democrats can't beat us. The only people that can beat us are ourselves. And so my message is, and Greg Abbott's message at the convention, it's unity. Just come together. We can't always agree with everyone who wins an election. You know, sometimes we pick winners, sometimes we pick losers. But it's the respect of the people.
Yeah.
These are if you go down our list of candidates, again, Mays Middleton, Don Huffines, Beau French, Ken Paxton, you get on the list. That's who the people, the majority, in some cases, overwhelmingly supported.
Right.
So honor the people who cast their vote. And for the people whose candidates didn't win, we respect in a primary. You know, we all choose different people, and whoever wins and whoever loses, loses. But we have to come together as one united Republican Party.
Two last questions here.
Right.
First, let me ask you about something that was added to the GOP platform at the state convention, banning in vitro fertilization. Do you expect this is going to be an issue that the legislature takes up next year?
You know, I love our delegates at the convention. They put a lot of planks in the platform. Most of them are pretty good, but I don't agree with all.
Do you think the legislature, file a bill on anything, obviously, but
yeah,
do you think this is something that will make it to the floor?
I'm just giving you the answer. You know, we as elected officials respond to our voters. We respond to our delegates and our party platform, but we pass a lot of the planks of the platform, but there are many. I don't know how many they put in this year. They put in a lot. So my answer is pretty clear.
Okay.
We'll decide where the people want us to be.
Last thing I want to ask you about is that most recent poll that came out from UT Politics Project in your race, showing it within the margin of error, essentially, with you and Vicki Goodwin. Did that surprise you?
No, I think we were up by 9, Jason.
The one I saw was 35 to 31. Is there another one that's
Yeah,
newer
another
than the one
one
I
just
saw?
came out recently. We're up by 9. Abbott and I are up by 9, like 49 to 40. No, I'm not surprised. And that's why, Jason, we have to fight hard. We are still about a 10-point advantage Republican state. And by that,
Sure.
what I mean, you don't register by party in Texas. So you don't, but you go back and you look at the primary and you look at the turnouts and you look at the history. So we have about a 10-point edge, basically a 55-45 advantage over people who vote Republican or Democrat. But that's why you go back to party unity. If some of the Republicans stay home because they're unhappy with who won an election, well, then that starts to erode. And look, at this point in time, if you ask the average person on the street who's running against Greg Abbott, they couldn't tell you, or who's running against me, they couldn't tell you. And so at the end of the day, we will run our campaigns and we will be victorious because I think we've done a really good job. Have we been perfect? Absolutely not. Do we need to do more? Absolutely so on the issues we discussed. But Texas is, you know, we're the number one job creator. I mean, we've got the Texas Stock Exchange Company. Companies are moving from here, from around the world, from around the country. Texas is the place where people want to be. And it's because of our conservative policies. And you sure don't want to hand those over to the left, because the world would suddenly shock people when they woke up the next morning. So we're going to make sure that doesn't happen. That's why I run these commercials about the Alamo and Independence Hall and Paul Revere and other of these commercials around remind people who we are. But no, I'm not. And by the way, Jason, whenever you see a poll, remember this, whether it's a Republican or Democrat poll or independent, you can change the numbers in a poll by simply sampling more younger people than older people,
yeah.
More Democrats and Republicans, more Republicans and Democrats, more women than men, more men than women. So I know the polls when I see them. I look at the data, who they're polling, and if they're off by 4 or 5 points, the poll is off 4 or 5 points. But I can't remember the. I think it was the was it the UT poll? I can't remember, but
yeah.
The latest poll came out. We're in good shape, but we got to work hard to win. I'm not taking any voter for granted.
I'll catch up to that one as well too, and obviously plenty of time between now and November as well. Governor, always great to see you. I appreciate the time.
Sure, always great to be with you, my friend. Oh, can I add one more thing?
Yeah, we're still roll up. Yeah, we're
still
rolling.
Rolling.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I have a new podcast, Lieutenant Dan.
I didn't ask you about this. Yeah, tell me about this.
Brand new podcast. I'm breaking it right here. Okay, you're the first to know. We haven't put out a press statement or anything. So, and my first guest is Ken Paxton.
Is it really?
Yeah. So we're gonna be dropping our first podcast probably like next Wednesday or Thursday. We're gonna go in the studio and record them. I have a nice little TV set. It reminds me of my days at Channel 11 in the old days.
Yeah.
You know what comes around goes around. A podcast is nothing more than we're doing right here.
Yeah.
Right? We just call it a podcast.
Yeah.
So Lieutenant Dan is going to be on all the platforms, and we have a lot of interesting guests because I have a big Rolodex with a lot of interesting people in it. And we'll talk about current issues, but I want to tell the stories that people haven't heard a lot, the behind the headlines that the media doesn't have time to cover, because I do get this great, one of the best parts of my job, Jason, for the last 10 years, Lieutenant Governor, traveling the state and meeting incredible people, most of them unknown, who have become very successful. And, you know, they're the example of the American dream and the Texas dream, and they have their stories to tell. And then people I meet from around the world, you know, I got a close relationship with the president, of course, and with the administration. And so I have a pretty good Rolodex for a lot of good guests. And so we're going to do that. Lieutenant Dan.
I'm looking forward to seeing some of your guests, and we'll definitely be watching out for General Paxton on there. So it's next week sometime?
Yeah, I think we're going to
Wednesday
it's
or
our
Thursday?
First one. We're planning to drop it on Wednesday, as they say. You know, you record it, and then it
Sure.
takes you to get it working. And but it Wednesday or Thursday of next week, that'll be the first one to drop.
Excellent.
You got the scoop right here.
So we have competition now, Wheeler.
How so?
Dan Patrick there is
going with the podcast.
Start his podcast. Lieutenant Dan, which is pretty good. Take on the Forrest Gump character.
I'm not scared of the Lieutenant Governor.
His first
We're going to be fine.
His first guest is a former guest of ours.
We've had him on before.
And we've
so
had
yes,
him on
that's
before.
Why I'm not scared. I'm not scared.
Yeah, Ken Paxton.
And he's got a busy job to begin with. I mean, how many episodes is he going to be able to do?
He won't have a library near as full as Yolitics. So, you know, Patrick there, $30 million in the bank. This is he's been here before. He's
that's
run
formidable.
Statewide.
Yeah.
people know who he is. The Democrat is Vicki Goodwin. A lot of folks outside Austin just do not know who she is.
That's so, her challenge, name recognition, yeah, and getting herself out there.
Getting herself out there. And so we had her in studio and put those questions to her.
Representative, thanks for being here.
You're
running against an incumbent who has won statewide three times. He has $30 million in the bank, arguably the most influential person in the legislature. Where do you see a path to victory?
You know, Senator Cornyn said that he should be worried about his position, and I agree.
That Patrick should be worried about his position.
Correct. Right. After 30 years of Republican leadership, the people of Texas are ready for change. You know, Lieutenant Governor talks about the Texas miracle, but so many people feel like they aren't a part of that miracle. Our education system is underfunded. Teachers are leaving the profession. They feel that they aren't respected.
Yeah.
They're not paid enough. Our healthcare system, we have the highest rate of uninsured. We have women who are dying in pregnancy. Our affordability is an emergency these days. People feel like they can't afford their groceries, their rent, their pharmacy. You know, it's really gotten tough out there. And so in the last 12 years, what has Lieutenant Governor done to make things better for the average Texan? So I think Texans are ready for change. That's the path. The path to victory is simple. People are ready for leadership, for someone with problem solving, someone who has a steady hand, and is ready to help the people of Texas not divert attention away on issues that really don't impact them in their daily lives.
Texans know Dan Patrick, and they have for, you know, a number of years. They don't know Vicki Goodwin outside Austin, though. What's your pitch to a suburban or rural voter in this state who doesn't know you?
Well, if you care about your public schools, you're going to want new leadership, because in the last session, we sent $1 billion out the door to a private school voucher scam. And that's only going to grow. Our funding of private schools is going to grow exponentially if we continue to have Dan Patrick in office. So if they are interested in supporting their public schools and making sure they are the best, you know, back when Ann Richards was governor, our schools ranked 7th. They don't anymore. We've continually slid. And the solution is making sure that our teachers have the resources that they need, that we can provide the programs that help our students. And that, you know, for me, I think reaching the suburban parents is, we care about your public schools. That's the backbone of most communities, and people really care about their schools. Healthcare is another huge issue too, though.
I've heard Democrats talk for a while about public schools, and clearly it's something that is a lightning rod issue right now in this state. But people haven't voted when it comes to education on that issue in decades.
Well, I think it's now gotten to the point where more people are aware as neighborhood schools are closing down. Austin is shutting down 10 schools. I know districts across the state have been talking about the schools that are closing. When it impacts something right there in your neighborhood, people really do start to take notice. I have a sister-in-law who is a teacher up in the Allen School District. It's a wealthy school district. They do well, but she asked me, why are we not getting the raises that we expect? Why is our district having another deficit? And I said, it's because the state is not paying its share. The state, we are a prosperous state. We underspent our budget by $4 billion this past year. And we have this, you know, our ESF, our rainy day fund, is overflowing.
Yeah.
But we continue to underfund our schools.
When it comes to public schools and the underfunding of public schools, as you've said so often on the campaign trail, would you support raising taxes to help fund public schools?
I don't think we need to.
Where does the money come from?
First of all, the $1 billion that we're sending to private schools.
But that's just $1 billion, though. I mean, you know, the schools need a lot more than that, right?
Like I said, we underspent our budget by $4 billion. We had the capacity to do that. Oftentimes, when you look in a budget, there are places that you can shift spending. Texas asked the federal government for a refund of all the money we spent on Operation Lone Star.
$11 billion, yeah.
That's money that is the federal government's responsibility. We never expanded Medicaid to bring all of those dollars back to Texas to help people get the health care that they need. Right now, we end up pushing that cost to our counties through indigent care in our emergency rooms. We can do so much better. We can look at the budget and move things. I don't know that we have to raise taxes. In fact, sometimes when you make things so overly complicated, like our school funding formula, it's hard to know where the dollars are really going.
Let's talk about property taxes right now. People are paying these, people are protesting property taxes right now, their valuations for their homes. What's the answer to these unsustainable climbs in the property taxes in the state?
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask about that because, again, our leadership for the last 12 years has been Republican leadership. And why haven't they been able to figure out and solve this problem? And I'm really worried that if we continue down the path of a private school voucher scam, we are going to see our property taxes going up even more. It's going, we're paying for a lot of those kids didn't go to public school to begin with. So now we're paying for kids that weren't in public school to go to private school and leaving less for our public schools. So it's going to become a real problem.
But do Democrats have an idea on how to arrest the climb in property taxes?
Do we have an idea on, like I said,
how can Democrats lower my property taxes? I mean, that's an issue that I'll probably be voting on this year.
So the state share has shrunk. So the state share at one point in time
to education,
right, had been 70%. The current state share of education funding is about 36%.
And the idea is that the property owners, homeowners, make up the balance
Exactly. Local property taxes have to fill the gap. When the state spends less, local property taxpayers are paying more.
So is that the idea for Democrats to put more, you know, is that the idea then for Democrats to put more money into public education?
Yes.
To lower what property owners have to pay?
Exactly, yes. In fact, you know, it's not just a Democratic idea. Back in 2019, Representative Charlie Guerin filed a bill to say that the state's share has to be 50%. It would be a 50-50 split between state and local.
That went nowhere.
It didn't pass.
Yeah, unfortunately it didn't. Let's talk affordability for a moment here. That's an issue that every Texan is facing. It's an issue facing this country right now. What could you do as Lieutenant Governor for affordability in this state?
Well, let's take one of the biggest expenses in the state budget, and that is healthcare. And that's in most people's daily lives, that's also very expensive. A lot of people go without health insurance because they can't afford it. Maybe their employer doesn't cover it. I've been self-employed for many years, and we saw our health insurance costs go up incredibly every year. And so I think that's one place where there is an opportunity to put more emphasis on preventive care and take a look at what our expenses are. And serving on the insurance committee in the Texas House, that's been one of the goals, to bring down the cost of insurance, health insurance, home insurance, auto insurance. Unfortunately, I don't think they have the ideas that are going to really solve the problems. And I think we go to some of the experts and we say, how are we really going to solve this problem? They are solvable problems, but unfortunately, the leadership that we have right now hasn't, they've had an opportunity. Republicans have been in charge for 30 years, and look where we are right now.
But what do you think the answer is, too? Like the home insurance rates, for example, because home insurers are leaving the state.
That's right. Well, one of the ideas that they had last session I thought was very interesting is incentivizing people to use things like metal roofs, because the wind and hail damage is one of the most expensive issues that causes your home insurance to go up. So I think incentivizing materials that will last longer and hold up in the windstorms is one idea. There are other ideas.
That didn't pass last year, though, right? The incentivizing program? I didn't remember that one making it out of there. A couple last questions here for you. Zoom out for a moment here. Top two priorities, if elected, what are they?
Funding our public schools, ending the voucher program. When I'm Lieutenant Governor, I will not pass a budget that has any money going to a private school voucher scam. And then really addressing our health care. We should not be the state with the highest rate of uninsured. We should not be the state that's known for having the highest rate of maternal mortality. You know, my daughter-in-law just had a baby, and she fortunately was in Pennsylvania, and unfortunately, I'm sorry that they're so far away, but she's in a state where she could have gotten care if she had a pregnancy complication. I want to make sure that women in Texas feel safe being pregnant.
And does health care go beyond expanding Medicaid?
I think so. I'd like to see a Texas plan. And the reason is we've had a lot of doctors come to the Capitol and talk about the issues with Medicaid.
For years they've been down there talking about that, right?
The costs aren't covered.
Right.
You know, the cost of care isn't covered by the reimbursement rates, so we need to increase the reimbursement rates. And they oftentimes don't get reimbursed for many months after the care is given. So I think we should have a Texas plan that looks at how can we, as Texas, provide the best health care at the least expense.
Will you be able to raise the money it requires to go against Dan Patrick in this race? He's sitting on $30 million. He'll raise more than that in the next few months here. This is going to cost a lot of money to run this race.
You know, that's something I work at every single day. We'll raise the money that we need to raise in order to win this election. I feel very confident that, like I said, Texans, after 30 years of Republican leadership, are ready for change.
Biggest misconception about Democrats, what do you think it is?
That we aren't savvy and business friendly. I've been a small business owner myself, and I understand a budget. I understand spending money in a smart way. What the Republicans are doing is not conservative. It's not spending money in a smart way. As a business owner, I can see that we have a long way to go to make sure that we're using taxpayer dollars wisely in Texas.
And one word to describe Dan Patrick, what would that be? One word.
One word.
It's tough. Didn't mean to stump you on one word here, but if you had to sum him up in a couple of words, give me a sentence on Dan Patrick. Why voters should look away from him this time?
Failed leadership. Oh, two words.
Two you words. Know,
his focus has been on religious freedom, and yet he wants people to follow the religion that he believes in. So that's not religious freedom.
So. Representative, good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, so that's Vicki Goodwin doing what we were just talking about, getting her name out there. And, you know, part of that is sitting down on podcasts like this one. She's probably not going to get invited on to the Lieutenant Dan podcast, though.
Wouldn't that be great? Maybe he should have, Dan should have Vicki on for the second episode.
He should have his competitors
on. And Mike on, too.
Mike Collier, because, and this is an interesting case because he's running as an independent and has filed that lawsuit.
Yeah, so he filed a federal lawsuit because he says, listen, it's too hard to run as an independent in Texas.
It is hard.
Yeah, it is difficult. When you look at it here, you have to have 82,000 signatures. You have a 30-day window to get those signatures, and you can't sign up anybody who's voted in the Republican or Democratic primary.
The parties have set it up this way to where you know, they're it. But here he is.
He's still going to do it, and you know, there are a lot of questions around this. If the courts don't act in time, are we still going to see him on the ballot? Mm. So he has hope that the judge might rule in his favor. They don't know when the judge is going to even consider this case.
And I'll bet you Dan Patrick is hoping that he gets on that ballot, too, and I bet you Vicki Goodwin is hoping he does not,
because he doesn't want to, or she doesn't want him to, likely, you know, siphon votes away from her. That's what's happened for every independent candidate that I can think of in the past 50 years.
Yep.
It's exactly what has happened. But we asked him that question. We asked him a bunch of questions, Mike, about why he is actually running, what his priorities are, if he can get over that seemingly unsurmountable challenge of actually getting on the ballot to start with. Here's what he said.
Hey, Mike, welcome back to the program here. Let me ask you a basic question on this legal action right out of the gate here. Why file a lawsuit instead of simply trying to meet the requirements?
Well, first of all, I'm not the only Texan who has considered running as an independent. And before I launched this campaign, I talked to a number of folks who have considered it. They all said, Mike, it can't be done. It can't be done. And I thought, well, I can do it. But then when I realized they're right, it can't be done, that tells me that there's a problem with the law. I'm required, believe it or not, to come up with 82,000 signatures, and I have to interact with each person, or my surrogates do, or my volunteers do. I have 30 days to do it, and it just can't be done. Now, you can buy those signatures. You can buy 82,000 signatures, and it costs millions of dollars, but that's not right. That's not American. It's not constitutional. Lots of good people have thought about running for office as an independent and haven't for a good reason. And so that's why I decided to file this suit.
And you say buy the signatures. That means you could hire people to go out and collect these signatures across the state, right?
Yeah, and we do. And we do. I have a team that's working now. And, you know, you pay by the signature, basically. And these are young people. Sure. And they know what they're doing. Very little interaction between the gatherer and the signer. There's not much discussion of policy. Basically, they stop them. And if the petition signer likes the gatherer, friendly young man or friendly young woman, then they sign it. And so it really has no bearing on whether or not a person ought to be on the ballot, in my opinion.
What exactly are you asking the federal court to do? What do you want them to rule on?
Well, I mean, I think it's reasonable for candidates who want to be on the ballot to do something to show that they have a modicum of support, which is the terms that the courts use. But it has to be reasonable. It has to be doable. And I don't mind it being a challenge, but it can't be just completely impossible. And Texas has the toughest requirement. It makes no sense. You know, it's 82,000 now. It'll be 100,000 4 years from now because it's based on how many people vote for governor, and it'll be 120,000 votes, and it just makes absolutely no sense. So it has to be something that a candidate can do. Let it be challenging, but the candidate has to be able to do it, and that's the problem.
Well, give us an idea. What are you thinking? I mean, 25,000 signatures. This is a state of 30 million people. People hearing this might think, well, 80,000 signatures isn't a lot in a state this large.
Well, I can tell you that studies have been done in other states that it can be much lower. That there's some states where you can get on the ballot for 10,000 signatures. 5,000 signatures. We'll let the courts decide. I have a point of view as to what I think a fair number is. I'd rather not say it yet because the courts are looking at this. And I have no problems working hard. I have no problems going out there and rounding up signatures. But as a practical matter, you can't ask volunteers to do something that they know cannot be done.
If the court doesn't act before this filing deadline is over, this 30-day period here, can you still qualify for the ballot? Will you still qualify?
No, I mean, it depends on how the courts decide to deal. There's two things that are happening here. One is addressing the law. And I think for future reference and for the state and for reasons that I'm running as an independent, I'd like to see others better than me, smarter than me running as an independent. I'd like to get the courts to say this is not the right answer. You know, Jason, half the country are independents. There are more independents than there are Republicans. There are more independents than there are Democrats. So we have to solve this problem, and that may not come in time for my particular campaign. I understand that. However, they might say, and, you know, for Collier, since I've had 9 million votes cast for me, it's kind of hard to say that I'm a frivolous candidate. They might very well say, OK, we'll give an extension. We'll let you have some more time, a lower number. We'll just see what the courts say. From my perspective, the most important thing is for future reference for the state of politics in the state. We need to have it possible so that strong independent candidates can on the ballot. Presently, they cannot.
You filed this lawsuit last week and no idea, though, when you were going to get on a court docket, though, right?
Well, my attorneys are confident that this will be dealt with in a timely manner. I'm not an attorney, and so I hesitate to say anything about how this legal process will unfold. But I'll tell you that we have the Center for Competitive Democracy and Oliver Hall as the lead plaintiff pro bono. And he's one of the nation's experts, foremost authorities on this. And then A.O. Sherman, we know him in Texas as Sherman and Sterling, a large powerhouse law firm, both doing this pro bono because they believe that I've got a case and they want to move quickly through this.
Mike, you know, what's interesting about this is it's not just you on this case. There are a number of Republicans who are also saying that it's time to get this change. This is not right. Did you have trouble recruiting them to this cause?
No. I had no difficulty. You might recall when I ran 4 years ago, I had a number of Republicans endorse me, even though I was a Democrat.
Sure.
And so I felt I wanted to call them. I wanted to inform them of my thinking, see what they thought. They were enthusiastic that I was going to run as an independent. And when we decided to file this suit, I called them up and I said, hey, join me as a co-plaintiff. They see the same thing in Texas politics that I do, which is that the two parties are becoming extreme. An independent who turns up at just the right time will do wonders in terms of moderating Texas politics and getting back to where the parties represent the folks in the middle. So they were very enthusiastic to sign on as co-plaintiffs.
And the reason you're going to court is it's not worth going to the legislature because they're going to protect their own rights, I would presume.
Well, I would presume. I can tell you that, the Constitution doesn't say anything about signatures to get on the ballot, neither the U.S. Constitution nor the state constitution. This requirement, which is too hard to meet, is a construct of the legislature. I don't think that you can say to the legislature, hey, let's redo this. Yeah. I think the courts have to say this is unconstitutional. I mean, I have a constitutional right to run for office. Jason, you have a constitutional right to have choices and to vote as you see fit. And the legislature has to have a darn good reason to make it impossible, which they've done, and it's the courts are going to have to weigh in.
Are you still collecting signatures while this lawsuit proceeds?
I am. The due date for signatures is next Thursday, June 25th. And so we're going to round up as many signatures as we can. And importantly, I can talk to the judge. I mean, I'm rounding up signatures myself, and I can talk to the courts from experience and say, this is what it's like. This is what it's like if you try to do it with volunteers, that it's what it's like for me. You know, for example, Jason, probably two-thirds of the people that stopped to talk to me voted in the primary. Well, under the law, if they voted in the primary, they can't sign my petition. That in and of itself, I think, is unconstitutional. And I've had friends and family say, Mike, should I skip the primary so I can sign your petition? I told them, no, this is a very important primary. You have to vote for Senate, you have to vote for governor, attorney general, U.S. Congress, all down the line. To say to folks, don't participate in democracy until I'm on the ballot, I think is I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. And about two-thirds of the people that I meet on the street say, I'd like to help you, but I can't. I voted in the primary.
Mike, your lawsuit argues that the Texas system is uniquely burdensome. What do other states do? How does Texas rank compared to them?
Well, Texas is by far the worst, and the folks that I've been talking to have experience with ballot access issues all around the country. It's the large number that you need and the possibility of a very, very short period. I can't round up any signatures. Of course, I'm doing it now, but I had to wait until after the runoff. Yeah. So that's 30 days, and that in and of itself stands out. So it's the number. It's also, we have to do it on paper. You can't do it online. Other states can do it online. There's so many things about this, if you think about it. In order to take a signature, I or a volunteer have to interact with them personally. You have to read a statement to them. Yeah. You have to write down their information. And then they have to sign it. And then you have to go validate it by looking at the voter rolls to make sure they are who they say they are and they didn't vote in the primary. And then you have to go find a notary. Now, you imagine doing all of that in 30 days. We have to round up a new signature every 15 seconds. The best signature gatherer can only do about, the very best can only do about 10 an hour. So if you do the math, it just can't be done.
Unless you buy them.
And I'll say this about buying signatures. I could go out conceivably and cut deals with special interests. You send me $5 million, I'll get on the ballot and then I'll pitch for you. But that's exactly what I'm campaigning against, Jason. I'm not going to do that. I mean, I am a reform candidate. Campaign finance reform is one of the things that's very high on my agenda, as is term limits. And I'm not going to start this journey by going out there and doing exactly what I'm campaigning against. I'm just not going to do it.
Mike, you've told me you voted Republican in the past. You've run as a Democrat for lieutenant governor. Critics will say an independent campaign only siphons votes away from one of the two parties. How do you respond to that? Because that's what we've seen in the past 100 years in this country.
Well, I think there are going to be as many Republicans break away from Dan Patrick and vote for me as there are on the other side of the aisle. I think we've studied this pretty carefully. I mean, as you know, I'm opposed to Dan Patrick as lieutenant governor. And I'm not going to do something here to make it easier for him to get elected. And our polling and what I know from campaigning around the state is there are an awful lot of Republicans who don't want to vote for Dan Patrick. For example, you go into East and West Texas particularly, they're furious about vouchers. And we'll have a lot more to say about that. And there's support coalescing from the superintendents around the state, the ones that have the courage to speak up. And I don't blame those that don't. And so there's going to be votes. And then the other thing, too, Jason, is that there's a very, very large number of undecideds at the present time. And in our polling, we see that those undecideds could break in one direction or the other. And that's a big part of the campaign.
You've run as a Democrat before for this office. Now you're running as an independent. If you can get on the ballot and collect these signatures by Thursday here, what are your priorities now, if elected? Top two priorities, Mike, what are they?
Top two. Well, from the very beginning, I've been pro public education. If we don't educate our young people and public schools, I mean, that's where the children are. 5.5 million students, 5.3 million of them are in public schools. We've got to get public schools right. And then also property taxes. You'll hear Dan Patrick and others say, well, I brought property taxes down. No, sir. You go look at your tax bill. It hasn't gone down. It's gone up. And so I think it's a sleight of hand that they're playing. And I think it's very unfair, property taxes. So lower property taxes, fund public education. You said two, but I'm going to throw in a third because there's plenty more. Term limits. You're not going to see a Republican or a Democrat fight for term limits, but you'll see an independent fight for term limits and ending gerrymandering and campaign finance reform and the other things we need to do. Save politics.
Mike, good luck to you. It's great to talk to you again.
Thank you very much, Jason.